Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. It is a party cast. We've got Purnell here. We've got Chris here. We've got Brooke here. And we've got Aki stepping in. How is everybody doing?
Okay, but now I feel compelled to eat tape.
We're all doing better than Tim.
Please don't talk about eating tape. I just finished eating. That's going to make me sick.
That's the one thing Aki hates.
Purnell has
There's a lot of things I don't like. I don't like Jacob. Up
pre-show banter. Jeez.
That's what I do. It's my that special skill.
There's a bunch of things I don't like. I'm a very hateful person.
We know.
So, yes. I would have thought everyone would have known that. Apparently, Brooke didn't. I'm shocked.
Flip my mind.
That's why we got to have boobs on access at all times. Like, she's losing it.
Throw exactly.
Covered. Done.
Brooke knows how to find the heart of gold in that lump of coal you call a heart.
That implies that I have a heart, and that's...
I also said to not tell Aki that it would go to Aki's head, so...
Well, we all know the blood has to get pumped somehow, so...
I'm not arrogant. It's fine. I don't think highly of myself. I just think less of everyone else.
Yeah.
There's a difference. That's fair. I'm not arrogant. Ooh.
You hate everyone equally.
I'm a gumbo.
No, I don't hate everyone equally. There are people I hate more than others. Just it's not in a negative way.
It's a dab of do
for everybody. How's your stream going?
Oh, it's going fine. We just beat Super Mario 64 with all 120
Congrats.
Stars.
Nice.
Thank
How
you.
Long did it take you to do that, having never played it before?
Oh, no. I have played it before. As a teenager.
I've never played it.
No. Yeah, that's okay. I mean, it's not for everybody nowadays, but sure was back in 1996.
I played it fairly recently. Like, I feel like it's obviously not like a testament to like, platforming presently, but it still holds up. It's just the camera that might give you some grief.
I think the newest Super Mario game I've played is Super Mario 3.
Wow.
That's all you need.
Yeah, I had that one that had all the various types of Super Mario on it, and I think the newest one at that point was the 3 that was on there.
So you never played Mario World?
I don't think so. If that's newer than Super Mario 3, no, I have not.
The one with Yoshi.
Yeah, that's like...
Oh, that was the first one, wasn't it?
No.
No, that was the one that introduced to Super Nintendo. I was like, hey, here's this new Nintendo console.
Oh,
Mario rides a dinosaur.
Oh, yeah, Super 3 on All-Stars.
Yeah, All-Stars.
All right.
Ah, okay.
So it's like a remake of 3, but still. No, I get it. Still like, back in the early
All-Stars,
90s. All-Stars,
I would have assumed. That's the thing. Like, if you play All-Stars, I would have assumed you'd play World before that. But it all depends on like how games came within the reach of you, so I get it.
Yeah, the All-Stars, I think, is the only one I've played. Is just all the ones that were on that or whatever. Because I know there was one that I had that had like 3 or 4 different Mario games on it.
I mean, and you've never crossed the Butter Bridge. You never crossed the Butter Bridge.
Purnell is aghast at the situation.
It needs to be remedied with the emulation and everything. You could just, boot it up just to say, hey, I did the...
I am computer illiterate, yo.
Yeah, I need to be computer literate. Just get that... What was it, the
emulator
SNES classic they put out?
Do you emulator. Want a Switch? That's the word. Emulator. I have to
Do you
be
want a
computer
Switch?
Literate. No. God, no.
Yeah, she didn't have a Switch.
That's why I haven't played any of the Super Mario games since that one. The SNES is the last one I had.
She didn't have a Switch, which is why I end up with some of the porny games.
Straight up. I did have an N64, but I never had any of the Mario games for it. I only had like 6 or 7 games for that. So,
well, be still my heart.
There's 6 or 7 games that weren't Mario games on the N64.
Uh huh. I had a bunch of little weird fucking games. I think the most popular one I had was
Glover.
Gemini? Starship Gemini, Gemini or something like that?
Jet Force Gemini.
Yeah. I think
that was a good game, actually. Hard as shit, though.
Yeah, I think that was the most popular game I had on there.
It was rare. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't even a good pun. But yeah. Jet Force Gemini was good. But that NC4 had more games than people like to give it credit for. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and say like a bevy of them or anything, but it was some good games on there I enjoyed playing.
And you know, since I'm playing down the list of Nintendo Power's top 100 games from 1997 list, Super Mario 3 is in fact the next mainline Mario game that I will be playing. It's number 5.
Ooh. Oh, I just assumed you were playing them all in order.
They're in order of 1 through 100 on the list.
Are you going to do the warp whistle trick or do the whole game one level at a time?
Yeah, the whole game, yeah. I mean, I just got all 120 stars in Mario 64. I'm clearly not messing around here.
There's no shortcut in Mario 64, though. Just get the stars, unless you
No, but if you get if you get 70 stars, you can go to the end of the game.
Yeah, you don't need all 120.
I see what you're saying. You're like the fact that you went for them all when you didn't have to.
Yeah, all the super hard ones.
I didn't know there was 100 Super Mario games. What the fuck?
No, well, there's 100 games on the top 100 Nintendo Power list that Chris is playing through.
So Nintendo Power Magazine, for its 100th issue, which was September 1997, released issue 100, which contained several lists of the top 100 whatevers. And the main feature of that was the top 100 video games of all time. Obviously, it's a Nintendo publication, so they're all Nintendo games. And I was so fascinated with this list that over the years, I've amassed most of the games, and then I went ahead and purchased the rest of them over the last couple of years, and I'm playing through all of them on my stream in order of 1 to 100. So,
oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing on my stream now.
You have a lot of free time, don't you?
No, otherwise
sure? I'd be doing it sounds like you do. Jesus,
this is going to take me years because I'm only streaming like twice or three times a week.
Man, you got through Mario 64 already. What's number 2 on the list?
The Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past.
Nice.
You can do that in an afternoon, easy.
Oh yeah,
DJ Cutman show.
Yeah, I did 3 hours yesterday, and I got to the Dark World, so I'm already like almost halfway through the game.
Nice.
I don't even know which one it is
because, like, you play those games as a kid, and you think of how big they are, and all the magazines like this is the biggest Zelda quest yet, and you're all excited. Now you play as an adult, and you go, "Wow, I thought this was a big game. This is short as shit."
It was my favorite.
I'm not kidding, man. I pretty much beat it and got most of like the freaking heart container. So I did it all during a concert. Like, the game is fantastic. It's one of my favorite Zelda games, but it is a lot smaller than we remembered it as when it came out back in the day. It's not that massive of a game. I mean, especially if you compare it to like modern games, which of course, I mean, it's understandable, but still, like, there's something to be said about it.
You know what you're doing now.
Back then, you didn't know what you were doing. You were just kind of fucking around, seeing what you're doing in the game and stumbling upon various quests and dungeons.
But that's the logic of it. It's just like when people say, you know, this game only has 8 levels in it. Yeah, but if you die a lot, you'll take forever to beat them. But it's 8 levels, you know. So, I mean, again, it doesn't disparage the quality of the game and how great it is. But it is genuinely like a statement to say, you know, when you play a game, you understand it, and you move around the world that the game gives you, it feels smaller than it did when we were younger. And I'm including replays. Like, I played it more than once as a kid, but even then, it felt bigger than it did playing it during that concert. It was just something weird about, like, wow, I'm already done. I didn't know you could beat the game that fast. Holy cow.
Like, Tunic was my favorite I've ever
which
played.
Which one?
Tunic.
Aki's like cutting out because she's drifting.
Oh no, I'm close to my mic. Tunic. That's my favorite Zelda game, and it's the only one I've ever played.
The only Zelda game you played is not a Zelda game. That's amazing in of itself. But Tunic
is Zelda, but cuter. It's fine.
There's no Link. There's no Zelda. It's not Zelda. But it, I get what you're saying is the play style. And it's really freaking good. Like, I know. I
just they just turn the characters into furries. It's fine. It's still Zelda. It's still Link and Zelda. They just changed your prospective girlfriend into your mom instead and turned both of you into furries. It's still Zelda. Fine.
So basically, they broke laws in multiple states.
Yes, probably.
Makes sense. That's the way it goes sometimes.
Brooke, what have you been up to?
How do I steer us away from this one? I don't know. What have I been up to?
Say anything.
I'm here. You're not steering us away from anything, hon.
That's true. You can't pit me up against Aki and Purnell. Like, I'm not going to be able. These are forces to be reckoned with.
This is forces of nature.
Yeah, how was your week?
That's pretty good. I guess it's nice. I don't know. I still technically work for a company that has been in the news lately a lot with Elon Musk. So I'm riding that out. I'm riding that latest wave out. So
I got to ask a question if it's not TMI, because you already kind of just revealed the place in and of itself.
Yeah, that was the point.
Come on, man. So how are people like, they're handling that? Because when I read the news about what was taking place and knowing what was going on with you back in the day, I was livid. Because it's like it's a joke to people reading the news, but it affected people's livelihoods while all that nonsense was taking place. And now it's like, I'm just not going to do it anymore. I'm not feeling the purchase. Like, meanwhile, people lost jobs. You know, companies.
He was never going to buy the fucking thing. This was just a publicity stunt because he's an egotistical fuck. He wanted more eyes on him. That's it. That's all this ever was.
I'm not denying that possibly, like, that's probably what it was. I'm just saying it affected actual people and their livelihoods for his bullshit. And this is one of those rare cases where we actually know a person who is around people that were affected by one of these big news events. And I'm just curious, like, if there's like a, and if it's, like I said, if it's TMI, just say, you know, bada bada Buddha. And I'm like, all right, gotcha. But,
Well, this is an easy one to answer because it is so open-ended and it's so personal. There's some things I can't say, but like I know the same information that everybody else has that's in the news and how confusing it's been. All I will say is it's since April, it's been a roller coaster because for Twitter employees, initially this was the threat of a hostile takeover. And then we had the poison pill situation to save us from the evil Elon Musk who wants to take our company without our permission. Then we have him offered a board seat and decline it a few days later. It's basically been a battle of, like, if any employees were sad that Twitter has communicated that it wanted to be bought by Elon Musk as an entity at any point. Like, that's clearer now than it ever has been. And so the last week and last weekend, it's been a blur. And, you know, normally I don't talk about this kind of stuff. But when Joe asked me how my week was, like, that's all I'm thinking about, man. The distraction, the media, like, I don't think I'll ever go through something like this again. It is weird to end up working for a company that's been in the news so often lately. And I hope this comes to a resolution soon. But now we're looking at the beginning of court proceedings that if we know one thing, it's not going to be over anytime soon. So I don't know. That's my long-winded answer to that.
Are you suggesting that the court system is slow? The legal system is speedy in this country, is it not?
Get me started on the courts in America right now. I'm going to open up a new court, can of worms about different issues in the country right now.
Well, there's that 1% hope I got where it's like, hey, if they have to come into court, maybe they'll bring Brooke as a witness, which means we can grab cookies because it'll be taking place down the street from my house.
I was thinking about that. I was like, Delaware, where have I heard of this clandestine land before?
Purnell's entire life for 7 years was the court system. So he's very much within walking distance of all the major courts in this area. So yeah, we could have like crumpets and tea. It'd be great.
That sounds cool.
You know what else I think of when I think of Purnell?
Something really horrible. Just say it.
Oh, really? That's what you think of me, Purnell?
No, that's what you think of me. It's different.
It's going to say rhythm games.
Hey, that's true. Ew. That
amazing.
Ew. Rhythms are great.
Hockey has no rhythm.
None at all. Not even slightly. None.
That's not a ew. That's a unfortunate.
Yeah.
Rhythm is the thing, man. A world without rhythm. Dude.
Anyway, is everyone ready for reviews? We could get to these.
I'm ready.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was great till rhythm came up. That's how he said.
Aki's going to be seething through this first review. First game to talk about is DJ Max Respect 5, developed by Rocky Studio and NeoWiz, published by NeoWiz, released July 7th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and Windows 10 for $49.99. DJ Max Respect 5 delivers an unrivaled rhythm game experience, introducing new modes, new artists, and more than 150 unique tracks, exclusive music videos, and for the first time in franchise history, competitive online multiplayer. Pernell, what is going on in DJ Max Respect?
Just one thing to mention, so in case somebody listens to this later and goes, what the hell, guys? I think the V isn't the Roman numeral. I think it's just V, like that trope of victory, you know? But otherwise, yep, nailed it. So DJ Max is a franchise that's been around for a surprisingly long period of time. Like, I bought my first copy of a game in this franchise back when it got localized, I want to say 2008, on the PlayStation Portable. It's based off, it's pretty much designed to play similar to, like, Beatmania, which was an old Konami, like, rhythm game, pretty much one of the first rhythm games to come out in general. But in the case of DJ Max, it was designed with the idea of being played on a specific handheld console. So the entire time it's been around, it's had this layout of being like, okay, it's a rhythm game that's meant to be played with a controller, which is kind of nice when you have an environment where specialized controllers aren't necessarily the thing that you're going to be receiving half the time. So this game franchise has been around, but then it disappeared for a good period of time, and then it revived with DJ Max Respect, which is pretty cool. Because as it is, it brings tracks from most of, not all of, because a number of them are pretty much going to be reserved as like DLC later, but it brings tracks from most of the franchise into play. And it has a number of new tracks too, including tracks that weren't in the earlier releases of the games, which I thought was pretty cool, the earlier release of DJ Max Respect. The idea behind this is that you boot up the game and you can select between a number of different play modes, being all button count basic, but it's like 4 buttons, 5 buttons, 6 buttons, and 8 buttons. And that's just corresponds to the number of buttons that you'll have to press, and corresponds with the notes falling down the top from the top of the screen to the bottom and beat of the tune that you're playing on. So as it is, you'll be hitting the buttons in rhythm. It could be either like, there's normal buttons. You might come across a scenario where the game might tell you to rotate one of the thumbsticks. And when that happens, you have to rotate the thumbstick until it goes off the screen, or until the note runs by. And sometimes you have to just hold the button down too in order to get the points for that note until it disappears. And it has an accuracy rating in the form of a max rating, 100%, 90%, and so on and so forth. So pretty much like, you hit the button, but why do you even bother? which is max 1%, essentially.
That's Aki rating.
Yeah, pretty much. Of course, even if you hit the button, depending on the max rating you get, if you're on a mode where there's a fail rating in play, you might still take on like less. You might still lose life even if you hit the note. So this game really emphasizes you hitting notes on accuracy. If you maintain a decent combo for a certain period of time, you'll increase something called a fever gauge. And depending on the mode you are playing, you'll either have to press the A button to activate your fever once you've hit a certain point on the fever gauge, or it'll activate automatically. When this happens, your combo, your notes will basically be worth more points, and it'll generate more health gauge. So it's a good way to save yourself if you're kind of in a bind, and also just to play for like maximum score potential as well. Believe it or not, what I just described as far as gameplay goes is the game. Like, as far as, like, any crazy metrics or mechanics go. But that doesn't mean that the game doesn't have a lot to offer. Because when you're playing a rhythm game, the whole point is to play to the beat of a song or 150-plus songs. In which case, this game will have you covered. Because if you've never played a DJ Max game before, you're pretty much getting, again, 150-plus tracks you've never heard before, which you'll have access to play and experience. If you have played the games in the past, like I had, it still wasn't a problem because they're still fun to play on the new interface, and you get new tracks that you might not have played before because they're new to DJ Max Respect. There's different play modes, not to be confused with the button styles I mentioned earlier. There's a mission mode where you can do a series of challenges to unlock new challenges and new like button layouts and icons you can use for the online mode. There's a sort of freestyle mode, which you can use to just play tracks as you choose, or whether it be like basically have to be all tracks you've unlocked already, though, because you don't get every track accessible from the very beginning. But as you play more and level up your character, leveling up just being done by playing the game over and over again, you'll unlock more songs for this area. You can just play them at your heart's content, to the settings of your heart's content. And there's a new mode that wasn't in the original version, which I'm still trying to get a handle on what the deal is with it. It's called Air Mode. And what it is, normally with these games, you'd have to do, if you do the arcade mode, quote unquote, you go through three rounds where you choose a song, where the difficulty changes between the rounds, and then at the end it tallies up your score and it gives you a rating. In the case of this game, though, they got rid of that, and instead they added Air Mode, which seems to be a mode where you kind of go on, and the game will give you a choice of three songs to choose from based on difficulty, and you choose one. And then the game will let you play it. But you're being live streamed and people are watching you play the song and they're commenting off to the side of the screen. You won't read any of those comments, though, because you're playing the game and the game requires a lot of focus. If you're able to play this thing and read those comments, I don't know what to tell you. You're a freaking monster. And I envy you because I wasn't able to read squat. But you'll just basically play the song. But you can't fail it. You'll just play it. And if you want to make a comment yourself in the chat, you can press autoplay and the song will play itself while you type a comment. And then you come back and keep playing again. And then when the song's over, it loads up another one immediately. And you play that song. And it does it forever until you're just tired of playing the game. If you want to back out.
A chill, relax, party mode kind of thing.
That's the thing. Given the nature of the game, there's nothing chill about that. These games are. Like, you're not chilling when you play DJ Max. You're working. It's fun work, but they ain't no damn chill in this. But you will be playing the game when you focus on it. You'll play. And it is nice that you, since you don't fail, per se, you can kind of just play to your heart's just on a whim and just kind of flow through a track, whether you pass or fail, and just keep going. Because you do get experience points for doing this mode, too. And when you finally back out and quit, the game will just start dumping all your rewards only at once, which is kind of nice. I ended up playing through one mode one time. It was just experience, and I came out level like 15 levels. I was like, hey, I got a lot of stuff, which was kind of nice. But overall, I mean, the game is just, there's an online mode too, aside from this, but I didn't mess with that. I've never really played online with these games because for me, it's generally about, I want to play songs I like, set high scores, and try to beat those high scores. I never felt the need to do verses or anything with anybody, especially because I am not the skill echelon to be versing anybody. Though if I were playing with friends, maybe I'd consider with people that I knew directly. The one gripe I have about the game, it's a personal gripe. I'm not sure. I'm curious about what you think of it, because I've played this game on multiple consoles over the years. And it's like the Xbox controller is a really good controller, but there's something about it with this game. Maybe because like how the buttons click in or something. I don't know. I can't quite place it. But I'm still trying to get used to nailing really good combos on this thing. Like it's hard to explain. But like I try to use the.
It's done with like D-pad and face buttons, right? Or are you using bumpers?
Yes, all of them. If you do 8-button, you use the two bump. You do left and right bumpers. And the
which ones are you having an issue with, the D-pad stuff? Because I know the Xbox has a weird D-pad, so it might be worth looking into an older Xbox controller that has like the normal style D-pad, or even an Elite controller that has
I think that's primarily because it's the cross pad and also the bumpers, because, you know, because I'm not mistaken, the bumpers even have like that thing where it's like multiple press levels for them. So it's not just like press it good. It's like, how much do you want to press it? So we are like, okay, put like a freaking chain of button notes. You're like, you're trying to hit them as quickly as possible, but the buttons are like doing that haptic feedback thing. Like, well, I'm not getting the timing quite like I want. you can calibrate things like using like the calibration screen, but I couldn't quite get it right. It didn't make the game, it didn't make it so that the game wasn't fun or anything. I was enjoying my time, but it did give me those levels of frustration occasionally. I was like, okay, time to up my ante and try to get like a freaking A or S rank on this song. Good fucking luck. But as far as like playing the game and just enjoying it, I was having fun with it. It's still a good time. And I remember you saying something to me about it supports a keyboard.
Yeah, which it, I did it not features have access keyboard to and controller support.
So if you can find a good keyboard where the spacing of the keys is just right, I mean, maybe you can configure a good keyboard to set it up and it'll just like let you play using that, using the... I think you got like actual like a click motion, like a better click motion in that regard. It might actually work out better for you as far as getting a good combo go. Or depending on the controller, maybe it's a controller that's designed to read like a keyboard. You can just connect to it like a DJ DAO or something. I don't know. You might be able to sucker it to believe that that's a keyboard and run with it. For those who are like, what the hell are you talking about? DJ DAO is a Beatmania controller that was created by fans specifically to play rhythm games, and they're pretty fucking good. And they're USB based, so hey, maybe it would work on
going
this.
With the deep cuts, Cornell. You're going with the deep cuts.
That's right, yeah. But that's what this, that's what it's all about. I mean, you get into, I've been playing rhythm games forever. That's how I made most of my friends.
Hey, that's why you're on this review. So it's $50. What are your thoughts on the game?
It's an easy purchase. Easy purchase. Because even if you find yourself thinking, well, I don't want to do air mode forever. Well, you don't have to. Just play it, unlock some songs, go play normal mode songs in free mode. You'll get experience doing that too. And eventually you'll get your set, and you'll be comfortable, and you'll just do what you want to do. But it's ultimately a good package, a lot of fun songs, good music. There's a little bit of something for everybody in there too. So,
and if you're still not sold, ladies and gentlemen, it is part of Xbox Game Pass.
Whoa.
Yeah, what? Buddy. If you have Game Pass, you could download a $50 game and just play it.
Joe was like, I've been waiting to say it.
Hey, first they had the Taiko no Tatsujin game, the Taiko game that came out. That was on Game Pass. And now this is on Game Pass. I mean, they're making some good moves with Game Pass and rhythm games. I like it.
For good reason.
All right, next game is Rune Factory 5, developed by Marvelous Inc., published by Xseed Games and Marvelous USA, released July 13th on Steam for $59.99. As the newest ranger of a peacekeeping organization known as Seed, protect your community by rounding up rowdy monsters and going on special missions. Cultivate your farm and friendships alike while unraveling Rune-related mysteries. Chris, tell us about your time with Rune Factory 5. And this one is a 5 because it has an actual number 5.
not Rune Factory V.
Yeah.
No, it is Rune Factory numeral 5. Yeah, okay, so Rune Factory. Well, this is a momentous event for me because I've always wanted to play a Rune Factory game. And I've always kind of like just missed them. Like I even had the old the first one on the DS on a flash cart, you know, I pirated it like a filthy pirate like 20 years ago, and I still never got around to it. So finally I've had one dropped into my lap and gotten to play it. And and actually Brooke mentioned a little bit earlier in our Discord that she put 200 hours into Rune Factory 4, and I totally get that, and I kind of wish I would have put 200 hours into this game before I reviewed it, so that I could see, like, everything, because...
It's just that big of like, a game?
Nice. Yeah, it's huge. Just huge. But I will try my best. So, this is a RPG farming game hybrid. It's basically taking the formula that was, you know, kind of started by Harvest Moon and taking it to, like, you know, kind of RPG town. So this one, I can't speak to how this one is versus the others. You can ask other reviewers for that, because as I understand, they didn't change a whole lot about this one. It's just kind of like, this is now, you know, not on the 3DS. It's like, it's on consoles and stuff. And you know, they re-released 4 on the Switch as well. So it's kind of a, you know, this is the one that's like from the ground up developed for console and PC. And of course, I reviewed the Steam version. And you start the game as an anime protagonist who has lost his or her memory. You choose which one you want to be. Their names are hilariously similar. It's Aeris and Alice. or name them whatever you want. Doesn't matter. And yeah, so you end up in this town with amnesia, and they immediately put you to work, which is, of course, the thing that you do when you, you know, amazing, have clearly suffered mental, like, you know, problems. let's give this person a farm and make him kill monsters and investigate a mystery that will threaten to undo the world as we know it. Let's do it. I mean, they got a cool hat, so they clearly know what they're doing. And yeah, indeed, you do join Seed, which is a group of like-minded adventurers that do, like, you know, things around town, help people, do quests and whatnot. Kind of reminiscent of Final Fantasy VIII, if you ask me, which is like the first thing I thought of. So the before the first day is done, you are learning how to farm, you are learning how to fight, you are learning how to talk to people and make them like you. And that is going to be a lot of what you do in the game, only like 1,000 more things too. So you will also learn how to craft, you will learn how to cook, you will learn how to fish, you will learn how to not walk backwards because there's slight controller tilt in this game for some reason. I'll get to that though. That's just a teaser for my one complaint about this game. But anyways, so yeah, this is the kind of game. So here's the thing with farming sims. Like, I go all the way back to the original Harvest Moon, right? And in the original Harvest Moon, like this game, you're given like, you know, a certain amount of days a week, 4 weeks in a month, 1 month in a season, 4 seasons in a year. So a 4 month year, of which you get 2.5, and then the game ends and they rank you, which, you know, the pressure's on, right? Because you got to do your best in like a pretty short amount of time. This game has 6 day weeks. It has, you know, 4 week months. It has 1 month seasons. And so the seasons cycle through every 4 months. But then they just start over again and you keep going. This game actually does not care how quickly you do anything. Fate of the World resting on your shoulders, not while there's fish to catch. not while you are leveling up your dirt to grow better turnips. Literally, you can level up your dirt. You can grind.
Isn't that how it is in all RPGs, though, really, if you have a side quest?
Yeah, but
Fate of the World, fuck it, I'm going to race giant birds.
Yes, of course. I mean, I'm a Skyrim player. I know how this goes. But I have main never quest. Played a game.
What's that?
Exactly, main quest. that's the one that you do when you're ready to like end the game, basically. or say you did. It's the one where like you finish it so you can do the post game content, right?
Yeah.
Anyways. This is the first game I think that I have literally ever played where the dirt itself has levels, and you can level up your dirt to grow better turnips and whatnot. That's the kind of game this is. You go about your daily life and you kind of just do whatever you want. But there's so much to do that you're going to definitely end up, you know, doing something that you're going to enjoy. Like, you want to run out to the fields and, you know, go on a quest and go destroy monsters, you totally can. It's got a great combat system that I would take an hour to describe. I'll say my favorite part, though, is that you use magic and swords and, you know, axes, gloves and frying pans, whatever, to take down monsters. And you also use magic, but one of the spells that you use actually can capture, perchance to befriend, monsters. And so there's a Pokemon, like, you know, monster collection aspect to this. Not only can you befriend monsters, you can make them do chores around your farm. You can have them fight with you, along with, you know, human companions. You can befriend them just like you would befriend a person by giving them gifts and stuff, which I'm so surprised that that's still, like, literally a holdover from the very, very first Harvest Moon, is that you just give gifts to people and they love you. And I, you know, and we'll get to the love part in a minute. Yeah. So you can, like, catch monsters and, like, and make them your friends and stuff. It's so cool. And, so, like, you can do your quests and stuff. You can, like I said, go craft some stuff. You can go collect stuff. You can learn new recipes for food by eating bread. there's a system in the game where there's recipe bread, and if you eat it, then you will randomly learn, like, oh, this is how you make, you know, lobster thermidor.
And so, confirm this is part of the series at large as well. So get to know some things never change.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of these systems, I think, existed in the old rune factories. And I read a lot of reviews of other rune factories to kind of maybe weed out a little bit of what's different about this one. One major one is that, you know, so you pick your male or female character, you know, and there's romanceable NPCs, of course, because it's a Harvest Moon that goes all the way back to the beginning. And there's six romanceable ladies, six romanceable dudes, and the game does not care which one you go for. So this is the first one where if you are the boy character, you can marry another boy.
Oh, or, hell yeah. All right.
Yeah. So this is the first gay rune factory. So, or bisexual, yeah. However you want to say. So that's kind of cool. And because as I understand, they didn't have that in the past. And I was like, what?
That is true. You couldn't even be a girl until number four.
Really? Okay. So like that's weird. Because it's like, you know, they seemingly took care of that back in like the original Fable, like 21 years ago.
Rune Factory was late to that party, kind of like ridiculously late, in my humble opinion.
They're there now. And yeah, that's
awesome.
Yeah, that's an awesome part of it. Yeah, and other than that, you know, a lot of people are saying it's like, you know, it's console version of what we've seen before, but what we've seen before is amazing, so it's kind of nice that that this one is now out and doing its thing. Now, I will get to the parts that that I don't quite like. I didn't have any problem at all with the game's content. The voice acting is good. We did an Erica Mendez check. She is in this game. She is this voice actor whose voice I can hear from like a mile away for some reason every time there's an anime, and she's done like 200 or 300 of them.
Jeez.
Every time there's an anime or an anime game and stuff, as soon as I hear her voice, I'm like, oh, Erica Mendez. And yeah, I heard her in this game, and she's in there. it started with Fairy Fencer F, Advent Dark Force. She's one of the main characters in that game. And ever since then, I've been, like, hearing it. Anyway, so I did that check. She's there. What else was I talking about? Oh, yeah, so the voice acting is good to a point. The thing is, when you're watering your plants, every other time, your guy or girl, in my case, it was a guy, will say, like, some encouraging thing about plants or whatever. It's like, hope you grow big and strong. So imagine you're doing your daily chores of watering your 18 turnips that you start the game with for free. So you got 18 patches of turnips, and you're over here watering them and sometimes missing because of controller issues. And every other time he tilts that bucket, he's like, hope you grow up big and strong. I was trying to interact with a rock to see if there was any way that I could move it or do something with it prior to getting the hammer to bust it up. And my dude picks up, like, I didn't realize this, he picks up his water bottle, his watering can, rather, waters the rock, and he's like, hope you grow big and strong. There's things like that. Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful. So, yeah, that's the voice acting. You might end up turning it off, and which is a shame because you might meet a new character whose voice actor is probably really good and talented. But
can you change it to Japanese voice acting?
I don't think that it had that option. I think it just had sliders for volume.
Yikes.
But I will check that and we'll let you know.
Just curious.
I will. Yeah, I can't load it up right now because I got the chat up. So, you know, if it was the Switch, I could sneakily like look at it. Anyway, so the main issues with the game, as far as I can tell, are controls and overall kind of performance. So the controls are weird. They're well set up, but the problem is that everything feels a bit like moving cursors around and stuff. It just seemed like my like control stick or D-pad, it would just like kind of spaz out, and you can't just switch to the D-pad to move because that's how you equip your weapons and your tools. If you just like tap the stick on the controller, and by the way, my controller is an Astro C40. It's a $250 controller with its own software where I can detect any kind of like controller drift and actually fix it from the controller, like software wise. Like I have a nice pro level controller.
Yeah.
And if I like touch the left stick and just let it go, my character will start walking backwards. He'll turn around and start walking towards the camera. And I was like, what is this? I don't have control. I checked it, I reset it, I did all kinds of stuff. And yeah, my character just started drifting. And also menus, I would just like kind of, I'd move it to the right and it'd suddenly go like two right and one down or something like that. Like, so I was like, weird. And I was reading other reviews and they were like, yeah, controller drift, even in the Switch version. And I was like, huh.
Wow. Okay.
So well, apparently that's a wow.
What's a wow?
Our friend Chris came in and just dropped 1,000 biddies in chat. Chris, thank you so much for coming by. Not you, Chris, other Chris. This is always confusing when you come by. Chris with a K, but not the old co-host Chris. Our rock band friend Chris with a K. There, too many Chris's, but...
Wait, is it Huber?
That's not this one. No, not this
one. Oh, another Chris with a K. Well, okay. As a lifelong Chris, I have to say that this does not surprise me, and I'm used to it. I mean, yeah, I approve the name, but also it's everyone's names.
Chris's, man. What great guys.
Aw, thank you. Somebody who doesn't have the highest opinion of me once posted a thing on Facebook that was like, never trust a Chris, because if Chris crossed applesauce, imagine what he'd do to you. I was like, all right, fair play.
I remember this story, and while it makes me deeply sad, that's a really good one. It's
pretty good, right?
Pretty tight.
It's pretty awful.
So, yeah,
Chris,
controller issues.
Again, thank you so much for dropping
the
biddies.
Chris.
We love you. Thank you so much. Hugs your way. And I'm smiling for you. So,
Chris, if it makes you feel better, one time a guy who was mad at me referred to me as a one-woman Chernobyl. So...
Wow. That's,
what the fuck did you do?
Are you,
Jesus.
I don't know, man.
That's legendary.
Like scorched earth. Fuck that person.
Yeah, really.
I've mellowed out. This is Chernobyl.
I've never even been referred to as that. Holy shit. What the hell did you do to this guy?
Like, you'll get there.
Friend to those I love, one woman Chernobyl to those I don't.
Wow.
Maybe that was just his go-to, man. Like, maybe... I'd like to think it was special for me, though.
Oh, from a one-woman Chernobyl to a one-woman bit dropper.
Yes.
I gotta keep that in mind. Someone gives me crap like, don't make me bring Brooke on here, man. She's a one-woman Chernobyl. She will melt your world. Irradiated, at least.
So yeah.
Rune Factory comes out to 6,000 biddies or $59.99. What are your thoughts on Rune Factory 5 for $60?
Okay, so like I said, there are a few little issue foibles. The game does not add a whole ton of content versus the prior games. So, you know, if you have access to 4, if you've already maybe put 200 hours into 4, you know, to get through the tutorial, then maybe 5 isn't your thing. Maybe it's a try it. But I will say, coming in fresh as somebody who has always looked into Rune Factory from the outside and never given it like its fair shake, now that I have, I can say absolutely love this game and I would give it a buy it. So if this is your first Rune Factory, go ahead and buy it. If it's your fifth Rune Factory, then, you know, maybe wait for a sale.
Brooke, any questions?
No questions for me, but I do have a fun bit of Rune Factory 4 trivia.
Ooh,
when you are... You don't know it at the time, but when you're picking your gender, Chris has heard this one a couple of times before. When you're picking your gender in Rune Factory 4, they do that by asking you, well, you're on an airship. And they're like, hey, you're on an airship. It's in the sky. You're surrounded by like clouds and shit. How do you feel? And if you say, goodness, it's so high up, you become a girl. And if you say, I'm flying high, baby, you become a guy. So, of course, like, of
course.
That
is so asinine.
Baby. Oh, my God. And I just, like, and then later I'm like, why is this my gender? And I realized what was going on and restarted the game. I was just like, this is amazing.
Flying high, baby. That sounds like a coked out man.
Dude, yeah, I was a dude after that, because that's my official answer. But then the old Rune Factories, you couldn't, you know, date who, whatever gender you wanted. So, but now
I just want to think about the office at the time. Like, okay, guys, we got to come up with these questions to determine what gender you're going to be when you play the game.
Exactly.
All right, well, men like to say the word baby.
But also leave the G off of ING words.
flying high, not flying high. Yes, I'm flying high, baby.
Dude, I want to be in that conference room for now. He sounded like a chick. It's foolproof. But yeah, I love that. I try to remind people how you pick your gender in Rune Factory 4 every chance I get. It's amazing.
No, that is amazing. I actually remember you saying that, and I forgot that this was the game that said that, and so I was like, oh, hell yeah.
So they truly have, they come such a long way with gender stuff, because like that's where we were on Rune Factory 4. So, good job.
Now in the future games, they ask you what you think of the sky and the water. They combine the answers. That's
and they're
work.
Like, are you sure? Okay, well, remember, you can change your mind later. Then I'll be at peace.
Yes.
Okay, anyway, we got to move on. Enough of the Rune Factory talk. We'll go on forever. next game to talk about is Quintus and the Absent Truth, developed by Rectangle Games and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released July 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $9.99. Alan Shaw's daughter is missing, and the only one capable of helping him locate her may be a small mouse named Quintus. Join this odd pairing on this search for answers, using the difference in their sizes as an advantage. Brooke and Aki, I guess collectively known as Brocky.
Ooh, I like Brocky. I also like Akrook. I'm going to have to think of, we're going to have to workshop this a little bit.
Brocky is easier to say, but it sounds an awful lot like broccoli, and I don't like broccoli.
Ooh, okay.
A-K-K-E, Ack.
We're going to think about this more. We're going to ask the Twitch chat what version they want to. I can go first and jump in on this if y'all want.
Sure. Let's hear what you got to say about Quintus in the Absent.
I'll try not to interrupt you too much.
Yes, you will.
Feel free to interrupt as much as you want. I got I copied down the five lines from the Switch store. Experience a narrative-rich horror adventure in the first person. Alternate between man and mouse to navigate riddling environments. Solve puzzles across four main chapters. And immerse yourself in a unique 3D visual style.
Okay, so there's only two truths in that entire thing.
What?
Unique.
There's only two things in that entire thing that were true. And the unique part was true. It does have unique graphics. And there's four chapters in it. Those are the two truths.
Ooh, okay. We're going to come out swinging. All right, so Brooke's version of that. This is like a short first-person point-and-click adventure game, pretty much, without an inventory. You're just navigating around, clicking through, advancing to the next stage to get the whole story. Lots of games like this. You play as either a man or a mouse, but you don't get to pick when you play which half of this dynamic mystery-solving duo. Start out in a house, you're learning to navigate around in the game and looking for your daughter. You realize pretty quickly that, yep, this is a horror game, so things aren't as cheery as they seem when the game starts out. Sometimes you come in contact with things you can't go inside of or interact with unless you're mouse-sized. That's when the game will switch you over to the little mousey. I'll talk a little bit about that more in a bit. The game, I'll agree with Aki, it's pretty unique looking. The game has an interesting art style / lighting / coloring mechanic thing going on, where if you're setting out into a new room and you haven't turned the lights on in the room yet via the light switch or whatever mechanism that room uses, until you turn the light on, the art is just like a colorless sketch of the room. It's just outlines of each item. When you turn on the light, if you're able to turn on the light in the room in question, the room becomes colored in instead of just black and white outlines or shades of neutrals to communicate colorless, no light in the room yet. I do think this looks pretty neat.
I didn't like the dark. I liked it when it was lit up. I thought it looked interesting and different. But when it was dark, it was just a massive headache to see anything. It's very stressful on the eyes when it's dark. Because
I can see that.
Everything is the same fucking thing because there's no color or anything. So it's just like, oh, this is actually an item, but it just looks like it's a notch on the wall. And I can't tell where the wall ends and turns. So like, I don't know. I'm walking down this hallway. I'm trying to find the hallway that goes off to the right. I can walk right past it, and you may not know that it's there because you can't fucking see it when the lights are off.
Yeah.
The entire second level was almost pure darkness for the entire first half of it, and I fucking hated it.
I know what you're talking about. I got lost in that stage a fair amount myself. You'd think that, like, since it is just sketches, it'd be easier to find one or two items in the room when the lights are off as opposed to on, because there's less detail. But yeah, it's easy to miss the little stuff when it's not colored in. I agree with that, like, 100%.
Brooke, you mentioned one or two. That reminds me of what happened in chat. Rootbeer dropped one bit, and then Chris dropped 200 bits.
We got to get some air horns. 3,000 bits. I didn't even see that.
Thank you. Thank you again for the biddies, Chris and Rootbeer. They are doing it intentionally to interrupt Aki, which I support fully.
Oof. Ice cold.
People go to do
drop it, bitch!
Rootbeer with another bit.
All right. A little tip for you. But yeah, so I think the graphics, they're interesting. They are the unique part of the game for me. Because what I think most people would
argue
as just an experience is that sometimes you're not playing as a human, sometimes you're playing as a mouse. Sadly, I'm just going to say it, I don't find this to be, as exciting as maybe the game has had me think it's going to be to be a mouse. I don't find this to be a compelling enough mechanic or idea rather than mechanic, I should say, to justify the purchase of the game for me personally. You may have heard me change from the word mechanic to idea in my last sentence there. I'll tell you why that is. When you're dumped into a new area or chapter of the game, I kind of touched on this earlier, you're either exploring as a guy or a mouse. I don't know if this is going to make sense, maybe to Aki, but those set pieces aren't like interchangeable, if this makes sense. You don't go into hardly any rooms from the man's perspective, and then you're like, oh, I'll change to the mouse's perspective and explore the room instead. It's sort of like, oh, I'm in this room, I see something only the mouse could go into, I'll send the mouse into that, boom, we're in a different area. So you kind of like, it's not really a mechanic, it's just like, you'll enter a different room or set piece. Yeah. And then you're either the mouse or the man, and when whatever's going on there is resolved, you'll either stay the mouse or the guy, or you'll switch back, and you're never really going to see the room from both.
Yeah, let's just put it this way: in at least 80% of the game, you play as the guy.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when I got this game, I saw the picture. I was expecting this to be more like Redwall or Ghost of a Tale or something, where you play as the mouse. I was like, oh, cute! You play as a mouser. I should like this game, and you barely get to play as the mouser at all, and it's very, very sad.
Yeah, and that is the cool part of the game. So, for a short mystery game, I don't know if I can really say that this is bringing a whole lot of uniqueness to the table, not to be harsh. You know, you get some pretty cool mouse perspective stuff going on here, some Alice in Wonderland shit. But yeah, like, what else does the game have? Like it's maybe going to take you a few hours to click through and get the whole story. And you know, this isn't a spoiler. You find out within 5 minutes of the game starting. When it comes to point-and-click mystery games where you're the parent of a child that something horrible has gone wrong with, but you can't remember what for some horror amnesia reason, so you have to go through the game to reclaim your horrible memories of how you fucked up your kid. You know, I'm sure it says a lot about our society that there seems to be no shortage of games with that.
Drop it, bitch!
And honestly, it says it's a horror game. There's nothing particularly scary or horror-y about this. I mean, you see a spirit that's a skeleton, but it's lit up and bright, so it's not like, ooh, spooky. It's just there instead. It's like, oh, there it is. Okay.
Yeah, agree and with you on that.
That's the most horror-y aspect of the entire game is that. And it's like, that's
drop it. That's not gonna scare
anyone, but like maybe 2 year olds.
I agree with that too. Like, we kind of get the game starting out, oh, bright and cheery, we're in a house. Oh no, something scary is happening, and we do have that eerie shift of like everything was okay, and now something horrible is going on, but I don't know what it is. But after we sort of get over that feeling, like, I don't feel that the game reclaims the horror tension at all. Like, I think that's sort of, we get this small bubble burst, and then it's just a puzzle game. I don't think it can really carry the off-puttingness to even give you the horror experience.
Drop it, bitch! It's not even
much of a particularly much of a puzzle game, because the game tells you exactly what you need to do. you just have to go from point A to point B to do it for the most part.
Yeah,
I feel bad that you two can't hear the chorus of just
dropping bits.
I can't.
Dropping bits.
Oh my God. Every time I look at the Twitch chat, I can't even scroll all the way up.
I know. Just Rootbeer and Chris have been dropping bits like crazy, like three here, two here. Again. Just filling
dropping bits.
Pretty pyramids.
I don't know if Streamlabs or Moobot or whatever can keep up with what's going on.
Probably not. They really don't like me talking at all.
That's hilarious.
Just fair enough, I guess.
Dropping bits.
Shitbags.
Well, you know what? Maybe it's for the best that this is pure chaos to listen to, because like. I love indie games. I love coming on here to support and hype for games. So it's actually a sad day for me when I have to call a game.
Drop it, drum roll, please.
Crap.
A deny it. This is a deny it for me.
Oh.
Well, you know the rule. You know how it goes. $9
in the Switch store.
I agree. Well, I didn't particularly enjoy the game at all.
I think if you want. Oh, sorry.
You got to have games that are denied to appreciate the bites too.
Yeah, so. When I get hyped for a game, I get really, really hyped. So I got to stay honest here, and I got to keep these games honest too. If you're gonna play, like, sounds harsh, but like even on
drop
sale for $7.99 in the Switch store, like if you want a mystery game that you just basically click through to get from point A to point B and you get the story, save a couple bucks, get The Kids We Were that Chris and I got to review last year. Awesome game.
I mean, this, to be fair to this game, it is a quick game to beat, and the very ending has a twist that I did not see coming.
Well, don't talk about it. Well, you just kind of ruined that there's a twist.
You won't not see really. Guaranteed.
But, like, nothing else about the game was particularly fun to me. And I play enough indie games that I don't feel bad about saying that at all. Yeah. It's just a fact for me. It was not a particularly fun game. It was more tedium than anything, which is sad, because I was expecting something like Redwall or Ghost of a Tale, and it's not even remotely like that. Which I'm sure
needs more mouse,
my
right?
Business. Significantly more mouse. And there needs to be more actual puzzles, because like at the beginning of one of the chapters it says you need to get this, and you take like 5 steps away from where you start, and it's like, oh, it's over in this area, and then you just have to go over there and pick it the fuck up and then walk it back over here and put it where it's supposed to be, and that is the entirety of the puzzle for that entire section of that level. It just outright tells you you need to get that. Oh, and it's over there. It's like, okay. Not that there was very much else for it to be or anything, but still.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a bit too simplistic. But it deals with stuff that I don't think very many kids are going to find interesting. But it's not complex enough to be played by anyone but some of the youngest of children.
Oof, I can't agree with that more.
Well, they're saying in chat, Rootbeer's saying we need a command from Norg. For a deny, I don't have anything from Norg, but I have this from Tim.
No way, Jose.
How does that work? People, let
what
me know.
Was it?
It's just Tim going, no way, Jose.
I'm gonna have to listen to the recording, hear that.
Yeah.
Tim,
do
that,
it again.
It works.
No
okay.
way, Jose.
All right. Well, Aki and Brooke, that is it for you two. Are you gonna hang out or get the hell out while
I'm
you can.
Here. I got a burger getting cold. I'm gonna go chow down.
Sounds
good.
Yeah,
I think I'm gonna fuck off too, I think.
Home of a good burger.
Dude, I love good burger. Well, now we're gonna talk about Good Burger next episode. You got me excited.
I've never seen that movie.
That was great.
Oh my
you
God.
Haven't?
Work.
Nope. Never saw the movie.
Oh my God, go watch it. It is amazing.
I will say.
You know how many movies I have to watch? Good Burger is
I don't
so
care.
Far
watch it
down on the list.
No, I it needs to be higher.
It's good. Absolutely. I saw it recently.
I've never seen it.
I will
either.
Find
I just
a way for
all
you
that.
To watch it. How about that? And then you can go watch it, Joe.
I haven't watched
now
Sonic
I
2
watch
yet.
It.
A clock.
Sonic 2.
You
need
haven't
to watch.
Seen Sonic 2 yet either?
No, that
even
watch.
I did that.
That
I see it.
That was a great movie.
It was but okay, Sonic.
Good Burger or Sonic 2?
Sonic 2.
Sonic 2.
Okay.
It felt like a nice 90s like movie that you would have watched back then.
Cool.
In a good way.
I like that they brought back the original voice actress for Miles. That was awesome. And I wasn't expecting to like Idris Elba as Knuckles, but it was amazing. Oh, yeah, he was great.
That's awesome.
He did a great job.
Yeah, great job.
It's like, if you know what you're going in there to watch, like, you're not going there to watch freaking Citizen Kane, you're going to watch Citizen Knuckles. And if you go there doing that, you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, I admit, I was thoroughly surprised by how much I enjoyed that movie. I did not think I'd like it as much as I did.
Well, I'm going to see it because I care about what you guys think and feel, unlike Joe, who won't see Good Burger. Oh, my God.
Oh, my Good Burger.
Do you know how many movies I have to watch still?
So you got a backlog of movies.
What do you do with all
games?
Your time other than play Guitar Hero?
Video games.
I don't play Guitar Hero. I play
Whatever
Rock
the
band.
Fuck it is. Yeah, oh, stop playing not,
oh,
that.
Whatever the fuck it is. It's Rock Band. You put some
Stop
respect on Rock
like
Band's name.
And you'd get other things done, I promise.
The game that has consistently released DLC for 15 years.
And you haven't played anything but it in the past 15 years. Play something else.
Come on, Harmonix, hook us up.
Look at my achievement list. I've played a lot of stuff.
Well, take a little break out of playing Rock Band and watch Sonic 2. And then take a little more out. And watch Good Burger.
The funniest part is I've played like 8 songs in Rock Band in the past 3 months.
Really?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
Were they like hour-long songs or something?
No, I just haven't been playing.
I'm shocked. What the hell do you do all day?
Rock to Rock Band, home of the
Depression's
rock band.
Fun, Aki. You just sit and cry a lot. It's fun.
Well, damn, you should go.
Stop playing with ballads.
You can cry while watching Good Burger.
Yeah, you can cry while watching this stuff. Maybe it'll help you.
All right, what streaming better. Service is Good Burger on?
I don't know, but I can find it for you.
DoorDash.
Grubhub.
Grubhub might have it. No.
I will specifically find you a place where you can stream it. I will do that.
You're all terrible. We got to move on. Next game to talk about.
Catch you later, Brooke.
See ya.
Bye.
Next game is Kroot, the Mythic Wings, developed by RSU Horizon, Good Job Multimedia, Pixel Perfects, published by Blowfish Studios, released July 12th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $9.99. Kroot, the Mythic Wings is a fast-paced hack-and-slash side-scrolling platformer based on a 2018 Thai CG-animated feature-length film, Kroot, the Himafan Warriors, South Asian mythology about the adventure of a Garuda warrior on the enchanted island Himafan. Purnell, what's going on in this game?
Well, you play as the person you just described, whose name I actually didn't say his name, which is hilarious because I can't remember the darn character's name either. But what I do know is he is a member of a race of Garudas who are currently being besieged by a group of, I guess, like Golem warriors or rock warriors. And through circumstances, he was pretty much in an attempt to take out the main leader of the army. He was pretty much knocked senseless and sent flying to a place where he was revived and then taught of something called the Mythical Wings, a special pair of wings that a hero wore, you know, centuries ago to repel the Golem army the first time they came through. But in order to recharge or make the wings useful again, he has to go through a series of 6 regions and request the leader of each region provides him with the elemental power to charge the wings up. It's basically an excuse to go to different elemental element themed locations. But that is pretty much the premise of this game. You are going around across a variety of side scrolling stages, attacking enemies and getting to the end, fighting the boss and then moving on. But what are the mechanics that go into this actual, you know, movement? So every level pretty much goes from left to right. You have a jump button, which can also apply a double jump. You have a light attack and a heavy attack. The light attack is pretty much your primary button for use of unleashing combos. So you might press like the X button 3 times. You go 1, 2, 3 combo. And then you can end it with the heavy to do like a bit of a slam attack. You can also, as you kill enemies, you'll acquire, you know, these like blue energy items, which will charge a gauge. Said gauge not only allows you to use the heavy attack that you employ, but if you max out that blue gauge, you can activate your wings, which will allow you to kind of fly in the air and also fire energy waves from your sword. So it's a kind of a good way to get out of, because that make you invincible, but it's like it gives you a bit of like mobility and a pretty decent stopping power when you're fighting certain bosses. Now, for the most part, what I just described is everything you can do in the game. As you're fighting enemies, you'll run up on them, you'll try to attack them to kill them. And it's funny because I watched trailers of this game and they show the main character staggering these jerks in combat. But what I came to realize while I was playing the game is that I had a lot of difficulty getting staggers off, to the point where sometimes I would be trying to hit enemies with my light or heavy attacks. And for the most part, the enemies would just like chip right through me and beat the snot out of me unless I had to play like some like hit and run movements or mechanics on them. But maybe something I was doing wrong. But I do know that the heavy attack, you can apply that on its own. But generally, whenever I use that attack, there was like a bit of a wind up to it, which also I felt left me vulnerable when I didn't want to be. So I almost never wanted to do that either. So, oof. I was the kind of guy that was like light, occasional heavy. And, get my blue bar up, trying to start blowing energy waves out mad until it runs out of juice.
Here's a question about the game. It has the screenshots and videos I've seen.
It's drop a it, great bitch!
Chris is dropping more bits. Ooh. Thank you, Chris. It's got a great visual style to it, but how is it combat-wise? Is it fluid combat, or does it have like a kind of janky feel to it, which is what I worry about in games like this that have those really crisp 3D graphics? They just always seem to feel kind of janky.
I gotta get a clarification on it, because I'm describing it in one way, but I don't want to misrepresent the game. Give me a quick statement of like janky to you.
Like really floaty, the collision seems off.
Okay, this game does not have a problem with. I'll give it that. Like when I hit a guy, there's never been a time where I was like, what the hell am I whiffing? I've never had that vibe. I've never felt like I was not hitting a guy when I should have been. But the hiccup that comes up earlier, where I always found myself in a situation where as I was hitting the enemy, since I couldn't stagger the jerk half the time, I didn't feel comfortable trying to make use of the combos the game gives you. Because early on in the game, you start up like a 3-hit combo, but eventually, once you start getting the checkpoints, you have to spend resources to activate the checkpoint. But then after you've activated the checkpoint, you can actually open it up again and access like a sort of a little upgrade shop. You can get yourself more health. You can give yourself, higher critical damage, higher attack power, and a few different things. But most notably to the dialogue I was stating earlier,
drop it, also
extend the length of your combo. So whereas it's nearly XXXY, and then you do XXXXY, and then XXXXXY, and this porno is getting really dirty, but the point is you can keep adding X's to your YXY combo. But since I have never really felt comfortable pulling it off in a way where I felt like I wasn't really left vulnerable, since I couldn't stagger enemies while doing the combos, I rarely applied the extended combos to actual combat. So for the most part, I just started jacking up my attack power and my critical power, and like basically just things that matter. And of course, also the big challenge with this sort of flow is that since the cost and the currency that you acquire again from hitting enemies and occasional treasure chest locating, it costs you 1,000 to activate the checkpoint, and then you have to spend the resources to access the stuff. So if you have a person who's very concerned about, if you die, you end up getting kicked back to the last checkpoint, you're like, I got to make sure I don't get kicked back too far, and you're activating all the checkpoints. Well, suffice to say, you may find yourself too resource poor to start upgrading past a certain point. So the game almost requires you to like not activate every checkpoint and kind of be kind about like, okay, this is a good time to do it because I've gotten this level down to the point where I'm not so concerned about getting killed here or something like that. It's an interesting, give or take. For me, though, the big issue that I was having with this game, and this is a personal opinion, but I guess that's what a review is in and of itself, is that while the game itself is competent, I just wasn't feeling it. Like, I wasn't playing this game and thinking, oh, man, I'm having a lot of fun doing this. I'm having a great time pressing forward. It was just more like, all right, I'm doing a thing, fighting the guy. Now, there's a boss. I'm fighting. Now, moving on, do the same thing again. Like, it would have been cool if each level gave you, like, something special, something that made it worthwhile. Even if it was just, like, elemental attack. Since you're going and collecting your elements from the different regions, it could be like, hey, I just finished the forest region. I got a, I don't know, a forest ability or something. I don't know. Something that made it feel different for going there that could also impact, you know, the gameplay as you're going to the next level. But the gameplay just kind of felt samey to me. And it wasn't really it wasn't grabbing me so much. But I mean, that's just me describing it personally, because I can also get behind the fact that some people will play a beat-em-up that doesn't change between levels, but it's fun because they enjoyed it for all eight stages the game gave you, right? So I shouldn't really make that necessarily a knock against the game. It's just that me personally, I wasn't really getting grabbed by it the entire time. So the lack of changing up the game, while I already wasn't really feeling the vibe, well, you do the math there. I don't know how to put this, because essentially it's not a bad game, but it wasn't a game for me. No. It wasn't a game that made me get excited. It was just more like, oh, it's good, I guess.
It's $10. What are your thoughts on it?
I'd probably give it a low end bum try, because again, it's a functional game, and I did play pretty far into it enough to be like, okay, this game clearly works. Maybe someone here where I just described and said, okay, I'm okay with the idea of just running through levels and extending my combo and charging up my meter to fly around and throw energy waves at enemies. Yeah. So the one design choice I had, I want to question just to throw up in general, is the fact that the game shows you how much attack power you do when you do your attacks. Now, your standing attack does like a certain amount of damage, but I noticed that a lot of time, if I was able to just kind of jump and attack the guy on the way up, just attacking while in the air increasing my attack power by like 30%, which was an odd choice when you think about it, but it was something that I could exploit, which was nice, but just a weird thing to come across.
I don't know. Any other thoughts on the game?
That's about it.
All right, well, moving on. Next game is Overrogue, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released July 7th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $14.99. In the underworld, where creatures of all shapes and sizes live, a selection battle is announced to decide the next Overlord. Complete labyrinths and collect crystals to achieve the title of Overlord. Chris, tell us about your time trying to become the Overlord.
All right, becoming the Overlord. Okay, so Overrogue is, this is the latest Kemco XCreate RPG, except, wait a minute, it kind of isn't. Whereas Kemco and XCreate tend to specialize in creating many, many, many JRPGs of similar ilk, let's say, this one is actually quite different. It doesn't look like it's different when you start playing it. It starts with the usual, scene of, like, the overworld, and then it puts the text over there kind of explaining the world. It's like, you know, I was like, ah, ha, ha, ha. You know, this happens every single time. It's like a pan over of the world, text, letting you know what the backstory is. Goes to the main character. The main character's male, and he's so, very soon, you know, he kind of, like, you know, spends a little bit of time describing who he is and what he's doing there. In this case, his name is Sale, and he is the son of the retiring overlord of the underworld. And there's kind of a battle of succession going on, to where anybody who can collect all the magical MacGuffins can then become the new leader of the underworld. And the game doesn't quite explain why, but the character is going for the magical MacGuffins, but doesn't want to become the overworld. He believes himself too weak to be a leader, but he still, I don't know. The game doesn't really, I think that this is something that's going to come up again in backstories or something like that. But anyway, he soon meets the second character, which is always a girl, and almost every time a potential love interest. She actually extorts him into agreeing to marry her when he becomes the leader of the underworld within like 5 minutes of meeting her. And then you meet the third character who is either really super quirky or just completely generic. And I'm not going to say which one this third character is, except to say that you meet this character literally, or my favorite way that you meet a character so far in a Kemco XCreate game, and that is you just find them on a shelf. Okay. The character is sleeping on a shelf, and you find that character, and then that character wakes up and joins you. So that's my favorite way of a character, you know, joining you in like the most casual way possible. So yeah, that's your Moxie crew, your motley crew of characters. There's also a familiar that it kind of serves as like the sort of the navvy to Sales Link, you know, just a little character that kind of tells you what to do and where to go and stuff, but it's not a playable character. So it's basically three playable characters this time around. Now, where this game becomes radically different is that it is not walking around the world, going to, you know, a town and then finding the local dungeon and going in and defeating the local boss and, you know, completing a quest and then completing some side quests and just moving on and through and, you know, on a grand adventure or whatever. This game has you going into labyrinths specifically to play card games. This is a kind of deck builder roguelike, if that makes any kind of sense. We'll try to explain a little bit better. So for one, you don't move from set piece to set piece by just like walking there. It's everything is done on the menu. So you choose like the place you want to go, from the menu. A little bit like a game called Children of Mana on the DS or, Lufia, Rise of the Sinistrals, Sinistrals. And, yeah, you just, like, you can choose your base, you can choose the local town, you can choose a labyrinth, and once you defeat that labyrinth, you can choose another labyrinth, etc. As more places become available, they're on the list to simply go to. Now, the actual dungeons, you don't even walk around in them. There's not even the tutorial for teaching a character how to, like, go down a, how to jump down a ledge. Chemco X Create Games always have a like where the main character explains to the secondary character how to jump down a ledge, but not this time because you don't actually walk around dungeons freely. What you do is you start from one end of the dungeon and then you see a collection of different squares that do different things. So some of them contain monsters, those are going to be battles. Some of them contain treasure chests where you get treasures. Some of them contain characters that buff your characters or buff your cards and all kinds of things, and you can just see the whole dungeon layout. And of course at the end of the dungeon there is a boss. Your job is to go into each of these squares and either fight enemies or don't. You can actually skip over enemies if you really don't want to fight them and gain experience points or whatever. Or, you know, you can try to go straight for the treasure and then escape from the dungeon entirely. If you want to beat the dungeon, however, I would recommend defeating the enemies because then you'll have to gain enough levels to defeat the boss. Yes, that's right. This is a roguelike, so every dungeon that you go into, your characters start at level 1. This is not a game where you're just going to grind up to level whatever and just, you know, breeze through it. You start every labyrinth at level 1. However, various treasures that you can either get in the dungeons or purchasing in shops or getting through the lottery system, which makes its usual rounds here, except it's a little bit more crucial in this case. You get what are called stickers, which are basically permanent buffs to your character, usually percentage. So it kind of makes leveling up more meaningful. So like, you know, it'll be like 5% more HP or something like that, you know, 0.5% more attack with slashy weapons, you know, different things like that. And those are permanent. You can always have those. And so your characters do get to enjoy a little bit of a sense of permanent growth. Having said, and of course you can repeat dungeons too, so there is an element of grinding if you wish. The reward for grinding, of course, is that you get more money for cards, you get more points for the lottery system, and you can build up your base, which starts off as a rickety shack that doesn't even have chairs in it and has other characters sleeping on the shelves. And you can, like, you know, boost it up to like something really nice, something worthy of a successor to the Overlord. And that's how it goes. Beyond that, between dungeons, there's about 10 hours of cutscenes all the time. Jeez. For some reason, this game's heavy on the cutscenes, man. But you know that's okay because it's a nice enough story. The character's pretty chill for, you know, being a vampiric son of the leader of the underworld, And, you know, the usual kind of forced conflicts between him and the other characters are done pretty well, comedically, as it were. And, you know, it's kind of nice to actually play as the monsters this time, because all of the characters are monsters in some way. The townsfolk are monsters. There's rumors of humans, but, like, you don't see humans, like, regularly. I think humans are woven into the late story, but anyways. So that's Over Rogue. It's a real interesting one.
Oh, well, it's sitting at $14.99. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, if you are into the aesthetics and the storytelling of the Kemco RPG games, but you're tired of the usual battle system and walking around and doing random encounters, this might be the kind of game for you to check out, because except for the gameplay mechanics themselves, this is very much an X-Create Kemco jam. I liked it a lot. In fact, I did purchase it on Switch myself, nice. Even though I reviewed the PC version, just because I just really wasn't able to be near my computer a lot in the past, you know, bit of non-working time. So I actually, I put a lot of time into the Switch version, and I put a little bit of time into the PC version too, but mostly I've been playing the Switch version, to be honest. But
nice.
Yeah, I bought this.
I didn't even realize it was releasing on Switch. I thought it was just Xbox Series and PC.
So. No, it is on Switch. I think it came out maybe a day or two later or something, but yeah, it's there.
Nice. All right. Well, next up is a Switch game. It's called Dark Minute: Kira's Adventure, developed by Koval Games, published by Feardemic, released June 30th on the Switch for $9.99. Step out of the shadow and set out on a dimly lit adventure with Kira in the pitch black platformer Dark Minute. Jump, dash, avoid spikes, and run through the level to collect 3 energy cells and open the exit. You must be quick, though. After 60 seconds, the light goes out. Cornell, what's going on in Dark Minute?
You just described it. That's the game.
Cool. $10. What's your verdict?
I think it's a buy it, honestly. It's a lot of fun. I'm not even exaggerating. You pretty much described the game. I mean, the game, it takes place across a series of stages. There's no, like, stage select per se. It's just level 1, and you beat the level 2, beat the level 3. And each level involves you doing what Joe just described. You start out, and your objective is to find 3 key cards and then find a terminal that will open up the door with those key cards. And then walk outside the exit door now that it is open. As you're running through the level, you'll be dodging a variety of different traps like spikes and lava pits and bats who are really hard to see sometimes. And just a variety of different obstacles, lasers, traps, etc. And you'll also be stepping on the occasional like a little tiny lamp that will create a light flicker. And this is important because if you ever have to backtrack in that direction, it may come in handy on account of the fact that after 60 seconds, the lights go out and the screen becomes pitch black with the exception of the lantern on Kira's head, like her headlamp. And it doesn't play around. It does get dark. There will be scenarios where if you didn't get to that space before the lights went out, you might die on account of the fact that you can't see the platform you're jumping to because it's out of our headlamp space. It can get pretty rough. And the thing about it is, like, I remember early on in the game, I was like, okay, so the goal of the game is to beat the levels in 60 seconds. No, they intend for the lights to go out eventually. You're not going to beat a number of these levels before the lights go out. It's designed that way. And the maps themselves are, like, I'm not going to go so far as to call them labyrinthine, but they do have twists and turns to them where it's not a simple matter of just follow the path until you get everything you need. Sometimes you're like, okay, going through one of 3 directions. Shit, which one do I need to do? Which one will I take to save me the most time? And you're like, well, I guess I'll go this one. Oh, bad choice. And you just lost 20 seconds of your precious 60. What a larf. And then you come across a thing where you're supposed to read it like a screen or an object where I'll make the character expound a bit on the situation. And then you're listening to it, or rather reading it, but the clock don't stop. If she's reading about a thing or someone's talking to her on a monitor, the clock's still ticking. So you might find yourself reading it, then killing yourself just to do it all over and keep all your time. I have done that more than a few times because I get the realism aspect of it all, but the system, like, it kind of sucks that they give you these, like, tidbits of, like, expounding information segments, but they don't stop the clock, which makes you really not want to look at them. You don't have time for that shit. The game is actually kind of fun. I was finding myself enjoying this game. I got annoyed at certain elements of the game, like the fact that Kira swims extremely slowly. Oh my gosh, she's a slow swimmer. But at least she wasn't drowning. She wasn't pulling that Sonic crap. She just took valuable seconds to get from point A to point B in the water. Also, I hated the fact that there's a lot of, you know, hovering platforms in this game, like moving hovering platforms. And as you're running through the stage trying to get from, you know, to the end before the time runs out, you'll come across like a corridor. It's like, okay, I got to get to the platform, get to the platform. But you caught it on the upswing. So then you got to wait for it to come all the way back down. And you're just watching the clock, waiting for this stupid thing to show up. Drives me freaking bonkers. And there's been a couple times also where there's a platform that's going up and down, but you get there while it's off screen and you have the ability to go straight. So you don't even realize there's a floating platform there. So you just miss it. Just keep on rolling, whatever. But the game is still fun. Like, I enjoyed playing this game. It's intentionally not complicated. It's kind of funny after I just talked about CRUT, but the game gives you very specific things you can do, but then it puts pressure on you to use those things to get something done. And that's the stress. That's the mechanic, and that's the rub. And it works. And the music in the game is perfect for it, too. It's very ominous, very, you know, tense in a number of cases. It works. The game works. Well, I think this is a fun game.
It's $10. What do you think of it?
I think it's a buy it, actually. I have no idea what the hidden runes will do if you get them all, because I ain't freaking get them all. But they're in there. You can collect them if you can find them. They're blue runes. They actually glow in the dark, too, so that's helpful. But, yeah, be on the lookout for those while you're trying to escape the darkness.
Have you ever played the game Minute?
Yes. I think I reviewed it for this show, the 3 minutes game.
Yeah, how does it compare to that?
I don't think they're very comparable. Minute.
I know they're completely separate game styles, but they both revolve around having like a minute to play a game.
I would say the main difference, or the one similarity I can think of, is even though your game doesn't end after a minute in this game, you do lose a lot of playability when that time runs up. So, similar to Minute, you'll likely find yourself playing this with the idea being to have like a dummy run or two, where you're just kind of running around the level as best you can to form a route, and then restarting the level when you're comfortable, and using your newly gained knowledge to do the level the best way possible, without checking story elements, without missing platforms, without, you know, basically you create the route and then you run it proper. And that's pretty much how Minute worked, too, for the most part, except you died when your Minute ran up in the
game. All right, well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is Cubite Classics Zero Tolerance Collection by Pico, developed by Pico Interactive, published by Cubite Interactive, released July 7th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $9.99. The name Zero Tolerance refers to an elite squad specifically trained, composed by 5 members that are available to choose in the beginning of the game, each one with their own unique weapons and skills that completely changes the way you play through the levels in the game. Chris, tell us about your time with Zero Tolerance Collection.
Oh boy, Zero Tolerance Collection. Well, this is fortuitous, because I had actually just played Zero Tolerance for the first time fairly recently, like the original Sega Genesis game. So, a little bit of history behind this game, because we're talking about a classic here. Zero Tolerance was released in, like, 1994-ish for the Sega Genesis, and is unique in the sense that it is basically the only, like, first-person shooter, like, actually, you know, smooth-moving, well, relatively smooth, scrolling, like, you know, first-person shoot-em-up video game. There's some other regions that do have, like, there was a Duke Nukem 3D port in South America, and I think there was this other game that only came out in Europe that was first-person, but as far as, like, what Americans could enjoy, Zero Tolerance is the, is it. And it is a game that is actually like a peer of Doom. So, you know, because I think Doom was also 1994, right?
And something like that.
Yeah. So, like, this game, you know, was developed from the ground up not to be simply a Doom clone, but to just be another first-person shooter that kind of worked out that way. The actual story is super simple. Aliens took over a space station. You're five people, and you choose one and go shoot all the aliens. You shoot all the everything that moves on one level, and then you move on to the next level and repeat 40 times. It's you know, and the game will let you know, because you have to like actually destroy all aliens. The game will let you know when a floor is or is not secured, quote unquote. But you can travel between levels without actually defeating all the enemies at first. It's just, yeah, you got to go back at some point. So if one character dies, that character is now deceased. That's how that works. And then you get to choose from one of the other four characters until you've dwindled it down to the final character. So basically, you got to stretch five characters across 40 levels. That's the whole game. It all takes place inside a space station, so it's kind of cool and like, that in that kind of retro sci-fi way. It will remind you a lot of a less colorful Wolfenstein 3D. For the fact that, you know, you don't aim up or down, you just go left or right. It's tank controls, so you, like, kind of slowly turn your character and then move them forward, which is kind of tough when enemies can very easily turn around and get behind you and kind of overwhelm you if you just run in guns a-blazing. But that's okay, because there's some strategies that you can employ there, you know, kind of luring enemies and, you know, not strafing so much, but, like, kind of... You know, you got tricks up your sleeve, and guns tend to shoot pretty fast. And the game is very generous with ammo. There's lots and lots of ammo, and in fact, it has some rudimentary rudimentary voice acting. So it's like, found a pistol, you know, things like that. You'll hear that 1,000 times before all your characters are dead. So that's the whole point of the game, and because this is the Genesis, you know, this wasn't, it did, they didn't even have Mode 7 on the thing. The 3D is a bit primitive. For one, they cleverly try to hide the fact that the gameplay screen is extremely small by basically making it a kind of strip that takes up about maybe 30% of the screen, and then the rest is just all this, like, you know, a map. There's a map, wow. There's your character's bio, wow. There's, you know, all this other information. They really beefed up the hub to hide the fact that, you know, you're basically seeing a tiny slit of a game. And it's compounded further by the fact that if you put it in like pixel perfect mode in this collection, it's also got, you know, the bars on the side to so that it fills up the Switch's wide screen. So, you know, there's so much screen that's not being used in this game. It's actually kind of hilarious. And I didn't realize that when playing the Genesis, but it does stand out a bit on the Switch. So that's that, and then the other things that are included on this collection is Zero Tolerance Underground, which is an unreleased quote-unquote sequel that was developed apparently and never published or anything like that. I don't know the real history of it. There's a lot of efforts to reboot Zero Tolerance that definitely went to the wayside, and in fact, we'll talk about another one in a second. But yeah, this Underground is now fully available on this collection. Apparently, it was just released for free at some point anyway, I think, because, you know, like, again, the creators couldn't really get clearance to, you know, finish these games for the console, so they were just like, well, here's what we got, and just download it. Underground takes you to Earth, where you play as the exact same five characters, trying to defeat the aliens in various subways and other conveniently closed-in areas. This particular game introduces what's called modern controls, quote-unquote, which just means that the left and right trigger buttons can be used to strafe. So this game does have strafing. It runs faster thanks to frame skipping, and it's a little bit harder as well. I kind of prefer the original myself, but this game's also there. And if you beat either of the two games, then you get beyond Zero Tolerance, which doesn't seem like that's even possible. But apparently you can go beyond Zero Tolerance. And that's kind of like, let's just say that was like DLC sort of, like bonus
it's an
content.
Unreleased
that was,
demo, yeah.
It was an unreleased demo, yeah, but it was meant to be included on a Sega CD version of the game that was never released either. So that's like 9 more levels of something, and honestly, you know, good luck seeing that. But I will say that at least versus like the actual Genesis original, this game does feature save states, so you can save scum your way through this one. Doesn't have anything like so fancy as like a rewind feature or anything like that. But, you know, and interestingly, this is one of the first like 16-bit style, like, you know, remakes that actually has noticeable load time when save stating or load stating. Like, I thought that was interesting, but anyway, that's not really that important. The key is it's the game that we all remembered as a Genesis, as a Genesis game. And by the way, I'm trying to figure out where to put this piece of information, but I can talk about that here because we're talking about the menu. So the game does have a toggleable one or two player mode. I don't know how that works. I think that you might need to have somebody else that has a Switch in the game or something like that, because I couldn't figure out how to toggle it. But I will say the interesting thing about Zero Tolerance originally on the Genesis is that the way you played it multiplayer is that you had to link up two Genesises and Genesi and two copies of the game with a special link cable that you actually had to order from Accolade back in the day. You plugged them both into the controller ports too, and it actually allowed you to local area network the two Genesi together to actually play a two-player game. It was like one of the first things like it of its time, and that was actually really, really awesome. So apparently that element is here, but I don't know how to access it. So
I'm not sure if it is on the storefronts. It just says it's listed as single player, so they may not have found a way to implement that.
I got you. So it's just a dummied out option, I guess. Yeah. Well, that's all right. Like I said, you get one game that we all maybe question marks remember from the Sega Genesis, and we get two unreleased things that we might have missed because they're, you know, from the freeware and ROM era, and you know.
Yeah.
But
well,
yeah,
it's $10 for the collection. What do you think?
I think that if you are a person with a penchant for old first-person software that isn't on the PC, who are you, and can we be friends? For me, I actually really like this game, so I would say worth it. I would have bought this game if I didn't review it. Anybody who is more in the like Doom and Quake side of things, you might be disappointed with how consoles kind of handled this sort of thing. But you know, for other people, it's a very interesting curio, and it is very cool to like have, you know, this extra content on like actual software you can purchase now. It makes it feel a little bit more legit for sure. But I think it's fun. I think for most people, it's a try it. But for the elite few, then you'll have more than zero tolerance for it, I think.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, that is it for this episode. Made it through.
Barely.
We finished.
Did we? I feel like we lost some along the way.
We lost a lot of people along the way. They're just dropping like flies around here.
We always come to the end of these podcasts now like a horror movie or something.
In memoriam.
Bodies until next strewn, week, across the, strewn across the place.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. But so, we're survivors. We make it every time.
We do. True. Thankfully. But music this episode, we talked about like retro shooters, but why don't we play something from Doom?
Hey,
some yes. Maze Dude from Doom 2. How's that?
Sounds
I
good.
Suppose so.
You suppose so. Well, listen, Pernell, you're going to have to just fucking deal with it. What do you think of that?
Wow. Zero tolerance over here.